Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, public health for the public. I'm Dr. Jim McDonald, Medical Director, Rhode Island Department of Health.
And I'm Dr. Philip Chan. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
So today's episode involves a very personal journey of cancer survival. We're titling this My Cancer Story. And Dr. Chan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year, everyone. How are you, Dr. McDonald?
Good. Happy New Year as well. Yeah, it's really been a great New Year for me so far. I don't know what it is about 2021. Nothing's really changed as far as the pandemic goes, but I just seem happier and I can't explain it. So that's good. So today we have two guests. We have Gail McDonald. And if you're wondering if there's any relation, there is a relation. Gail's my wife. So howdy, Gail. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Good. You would think you would know that since I just saw you a few minutes ago. You're upstairs and I'm downstairs.
Yes.
We also have Dr. Amy Nunn with us today. So Dr. Nunn, I want to just greet you properly and say, hey, how are you today?
Doing great. Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you so much. So it's great to have you both here today. And we're talking about a very personal topic today, this cancer journey. And it's one of those things, you know, part of what gave me the idea for this was December 21st, Gail celebrated her 9th year of her cancer diagnosis, and she's successfully been in remission. But it was kind of an emotional moment for us as we celebrated 9 years, because I don't take any of that for granted. It's funny, I think as a spouse of someone who survived cancer, kind of always live with this notion that the shoe might drop, that it might come back a little bit. So we're going to start talking to Gail a little bit, then we're going to talk to Dr. Nunn a little bit. So let's start with you, Gail. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you do, and just give us a little background about what's going on with you.
Okay, I'm Gail McDonald, and I am married to the wonderful Dr. Jim McDonald, and I am a mom of three. And I'm also an audiologist. I recently just started my own audiology business. So that's kind of a new thing for 2021. And I am a cancer survivor. I call myself a cancer thriver because I've survived and thrived the last 9 years since my cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, that's great. And thank you for that. And so, you know, as we just sort of brought out who's here, Dr. Nunn, why don't we just start with you telling us a little bit about yourself as well, and what do you do, and where do you specialize, and what, a little bit about your background story.
So my name is Amy Nunn, and I'm a professor of public health and medicine at Brown University, and I'm also executive director of a nonprofit organization called the Rhode Island Public Health Institute. Our mission is to reduce health disparities in Rhode Island and beyond.
So thank you, Dr. Nunn. So Gail, let's just start with you a little bit. So we're going to talk a lot about this personal journey of surviving cancer. Can you tell our listeners at home about the first time you received that diagnosis?
So I was first diagnosed December 21st of 2011. I was 45 at the time and had three kids. They were 9, 11, and 13. And then, you know, it was definitely a life-changing event to get that news when you're first diagnosed. And of course you were with me when that happened. And
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that day very well. When I remember that, like, I remember we had a call from the doctor's office that the CAT scan, which was going to take 2 weeks to interpret, somehow got done in a day, and they had a cancellation and could squeeze us in. And I remember leaving work thinking, like, that just does not sound like the news you want to hear. And it was interesting. Like, one of the things I remember about that was the first time you received that diagnosis, like, one of the things I remember about this very distinctly was you and I were at Macy's in Warwick shopping because you were going to start a new job.
Right.
And tell me about that night. What happened at Macy's that night that got us a little concerned?
Yeah. So we were at Macy's shopping. I was going to get some new suits for my new job. And you were bringing me clothes. I was in the dressing room and you were just bringing me different sizes, and the sizes were less. So I think you realized that I had lost a lot of weight, and that's kind of when we came home and had a discussion about that. You know, I had actually had symptoms for at least 6 months before that. So you know, you were the one who really said to me, something isn't right. You need to go to your doctor. In fact, I would even say you were kind of upset and mad at me. Like, I remember you kind of almost even yelling at me, like, what is going on? Something's not right. You lost a lot of weight. And you were just really stern. You're like, call your doctor tomorrow. So I tell people, you saved my life, because I wasn't really, like, I wasn't noticing the signs like you were.
Yeah, so that was the Dr. McDonald who was talking to you and your husband at that night. Because what I remember is you telling me, I still remember this, you ultimately had ovarian cancer. And I think we just got to get that out in the open. You know, right. Stage 3 or 4 ovarian cancer, the staging really didn't matter. But what was interesting was one of the things I remember about the Macy's was I was handing you clothes and you came out and they looked so big on you. And I said, this is unusual to me. I don't really know much about women's clothes. And she said, you had mentioned I've lost 30 pounds. And I was like, a little bit like, why did I not notice you losing 30 pounds? Like, you would think as a husband, I would notice that kind of thing. I have no knowledge of this at all, which I think just speaks volumes about where I was in my career at that point, probably working much too much to not even notice this. But I remember you saying something like, you know, is that a problem? And I'm like, yeah, you call your doctor the next day and they will see the next day. You open with, I've lost 30 pounds in the last few months and I can't explain it. And, you know, because that's one of those things, those are magic words to doctor's office. If you lose a lot of weight in a short period of time, that equals, we're going to see you today. And I remember at that point, they ordered the CAT scan right away, which was great. They did that. And I, you know, and then we eventually had that conversation with the PA. I remember the PA explained to us there was a mass and it was all this. And I remember too, very distinctly, when this diagnosis came across, it was a shock to me. I'm sure it was a shock to you.
Right.
What was running through your mind when you heard her talk about this? What was running through your mind?
So I think I basically just heard you have a mass the size of a baseball. And I wasn't really processing completely cancer. I wasn't letting myself process that. I was kind of still processing, well, it could be cancer, but you don't really know until you have the biopsy. So I wasn't really kind of letting myself completely go there until I think you were the one who said, well, is there a gynecology oncologist in Rhode Island? We were new to Rhode Island, so we didn't really know the whole medical setting. And that was, you know, that was a big question. When I heard that word oncologist, like, wow, that means this could be cancer. I mean, I know you were way ahead of me in that cancer thinking, but for ovarian cancer, that's the question you need to ask is, where's the closest gynecology oncologist? Because they're the ones who really specialize in ovarian cancer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember that conversation extremely well because they originally were going to refer you to an oncologist in a different part of the state. And because I had been to medical school and done a rotation in gynecology, oncology, you know, I at least had knowledge that that specialty existed, that there was such a thing as a gynecologist who just did oncology. And I knew those are the ones who deal with that. And I didn't know what kind of cancer you had. I just knew that when I heard you had a pelvic mass, my first thought was, well, if someone has a mass in that area, tissue is the issue. You've got to get tissue under a microscope to figure this out. And, you know, of course, cancer was what I was first worried about. I remember, too, you know, just to get a little emotional on my own, you know, emotions that night. Like, I remember saying to the PA, this is such an honest but sort of somewhat crazy thing to say. But mm-hmm. I said, this isn't fair. We actually love each other. We're happily married. We, you know, and it was almost like that mattered somehow. Like, somehow it was just one of those things that was kind of silly to say at the time. But it was honest, but it was one of those things where I think what I was kind of honestly expressing was, we've had a really perfect life up until this point, and it just seems so unfair. Did you think it felt unfair at all that you had cancer? Because your journey's been fun to watch for me, because you're such an inspiration and hope to me, and I think to others. What were you thinking when that went through your head?
In the doctor's office?
Because
I never have felt like it was unfair for me to have cancer, because why not me? Like, things happen to everybody. So why would I say that, you know, things shouldn't happen to me? That never really crossed my mind that it's unfair. But I do remember also in the doctor's office, you saying to them that, you know, they were going through all the medical terminology, which I don't really know, you know, that was a little overwhelming for me, but you were saying, okay, we're full. Like, we can't take any more information. We're just trying to process this. And I remember the doctor kind of kept talking. And I think you said it again, we're full. Like, I feel like that's good for people to know that they can tell their doctor when they can't really process any more information, because it's a lot, especially for somebody. I mean, you understood all the medical stuff, but like for me, who just doesn't really know the terminology, it's a lot to automatically be, you're being thrust into like the medical setting that, you know, you don't really understand. So it's okay if you need to say, I'm full, I can't grasp anymore.
Yeah, I remember that moment. I think it might come as a surprise to someone who's listening that a doctor could say, my brain is full right now. However, you know, I've always tried to be, as a physician, when it comes to my immediate family, I've always tried to be a dad or a husband. I've tried not to be the physician, because it's been my experience that my family members deserve to have their own physician, and I try not to be too involved. But at that point, I'm just being your husband, and just quite frankly, the emotions were pretty much for me, because all of a sudden my mind was going places it shouldn't have gone, right? All of a sudden I'm thinking like, I'm going to be a single dad. I got three kids on my own. I'm going to lose my best friend, my soulmate. I mean, my mind went a lot of places really, really quickly that weren't healthy to go. And it was just me being honest about where my mind went that day, because it was a lot to process. And it kind of makes me lead into my next question, is those were difficult times. And there were a lot of difficult times, particularly in the beginning with chemo. There was just a lot of difficult times. What got you through some of those difficult times?
Well, I definitely think that family got me through a lot of it. Like, you know, your family came, and even though they lived in New York, several family members came, friends came. That's when you really see who your friends are. Like friends of ours from Pennsylvania came to help. Of course, our church family, people were sending meals. Of course, I was going through chemo, so I didn't really eat much. And I remember at one point you said, you know, we like lasagna, but we've kind of had enough lasagna. Like our freezer was full of lasagnas, which really is a blessing, like that we had so many friends that were bringing meals to us that we had to ask them to stop. So friends and family, and then of course, just my faith that, you know, God isn't going to let me have more than I can handle. And we're going to all get through this together. I think it was the kids that kept me going. Like when you have young kids, you have to get up in the morning. You have to make sure they get to school and their lunches are made. And so that really, you just kind of, even though you're having chemo, and I had two surgeries, three if you count putting the port in. So all of that just keeps you just have to keep going for your family.
Yeah, and we haven't had a relapse yet, but we had a scare about a relapse a little while ago. You want to talk about that scare, about that relapse a little bit?
It was probably about 3 years ago when my CA125, which is the blood test that I have to check for, cancer levels, for ovarian cancer. So my numbers went really high, and so they had me go do a CAT scan, but everything was normal on the CAT scan. But there's, always that period of time between when you have the test done and you see the doctor that you really start to, think, well, maybe this is it. To go 9 years without a reoccurrence for advanced stage ovarian cancer is just amazing to me. I met a lot of other women who have had ovarian cancer, and I'm like the only one that's gone this long without a reoccurrence. So it's, again, kind of just waiting for the ball to drop, I guess, but trying to live life to the max.
Yeah, and it really is interesting. We have a lot to be thankful for, and I think we both know we have a lot to be thankful for, and I think we live every day with that spirit of thankfulness. You know, but we're living in a pandemic right now, and I'm just curious, as it's been, you know, a little bit of a year over for the planet to live through the pandemic. In Rhode Island, it's been about 10 months living through the pandemic. Has the pandemic affected your cancer journey at all?
So I think it has, in that even though I've been cancer free for 9 years, there's still, over those 9 years, been effects of the cancer, where I was on Avastin for 7 years. So every 3 weeks I went and had an infusion of Avastin for 7 years. And then because of that, I've had some other physical issues because of the side effects, which make me higher risk for COVID-19. So that's been, you know, me trying to actually really be a lot more careful and not go out and wearing my mask. Of course, you know, I'm living with the public health officer, so that's another reason. But, you know, I feel like that's definitely affected me more because I'm higher risk now. And so I've really had to be a lot more careful. And also, you know, in one of your other podcasts, you talked about the long-term effects of COVID, and it's really made me realize that cancer survivors, even though they're cancer survivors, a lot of them have long-term effects of the cancer. So, you know, kind of that, but you really feel like you're cancer-free, so you can't complain, but there are long-term side effects to having cancer.
And one of those for you was losing vision in your right eye, wasn't it?
Yes.
And we really don't know what that was about, but we think that was from,
we don't know. Pretty sure it's from the Avastin that I was on. But again, I'm cancer free, so, you know, that's, don't mind having that vision loss if I can be cancer free.
So do you have any advice for people who might be going through a similar situation right now?
I do have some advice, and I want to backtrack just a little bit to just review the signs of ovarian cancer, which is usually bloating, diarrhea, abdominal pain, you know, weight loss. So, you know, one piece of advice I have is, if you're having any of those signs, it took me 6 months to get the diagnosis from when I went to my doctor for the first time with symptoms to when I actually was diagnosed. And so one piece of advice I have is, be persistent with your doctor. You know your body. And if you feel like you're not getting better, just keep going back to your doctor, so that, because ovarian cancer usually isn't one of the first things that they look for. So just keep going back. I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. And I remember at one point being so miserable, thinking, wow, if this is irritable bowel, this is just terrible. Like, you know, how am I going to live for the rest of my life like this? But I kind of wish I had persisted more with going back. So that's one piece of advice that I would give people. And you know, no matter what your age, so if you have ovaries, you have the possibility of ovarian cancer, no matter what your age, or even your, you know, how you identify, you can have ovarian cancer. So just be persistent if you're having any of those symptoms, and live your life to the max now. Like, none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. So, you know, just live your best life.
Yeah. Thank you, Gail, for sharing that. I think, you know, it's always certainly touching and a great reminder to hear these stories. Thank you for being comfortable to share that. And I think one thing that I'm reminded of during the pandemic here is that we know and we've seen that a lot of people have lagged behind some of their preventative healthcare screening, including cancer screening. And I think this is just such a great reminder for people to advocate for themselves and, of course, to make sure to check in with their provider about some of these things, which can, frankly, save lives. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. I think we want to switch now to Dr. Nunn. So thank you again, Dr. Nunn, for joining us. I will say as a disclaimer, I've worked for the last decade here with Dr. Nunn. She's really one of the more accomplished public health scientists in the state on staff over at the Brown University School of Public Health. And we've both done a lot of work together in the sexual health field, especially with HIV prevention, STI prevention. And thank you, Dr. Nunn, for coming on today and sharing your story. Tell us a little bit about, I know you told us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your personal journey here with cancer and how it all started.
So my story is a little bit different than Gail's, and just also want to thank her for sharing those poignant reflections. I have a long family history of breast cancer. My mother had it, her aunt, all of her cousins. And none of us have any genes that have been discovered. So I always assumed that I would get cancer, breast cancer, and I have been on a prevention regimen since I was 34. I'm 43 now. And people may have read in the headlines that there's been a lot of controversy around mammogram screening. It used to be that mammograms were recommended for everyone over age 40 once a year. And then there have been controversy about whether or not people should get screened and whether or not insurance companies and the federal government would be paying for mammograms. And that's because sometimes mammograms can be insensitive, and sometimes there are a lot of false positives, which means that a lot of people get biopsies that end up not having any malignancies. And so one thing that happened that affected me was that our insurance company stopped paying for mammogram screenings every year. And I had been getting mammograms and MRIs alternating because of my family history. And I also have very dense breast tissue. And so I got off the cycle of getting screened as regularly as I was before because the guidelines were changing, and I ended up having to pay out of pocket for a lot of screenings. And then my breast surgeon during my visit said, "Hey, it's been a little while since you, I know you had your mammogram in January, but it's been a little while since you had your preventive MRI." Because people with a family history, it's not well understood, often have to get both. He said, "Let's get you back on that." And I said, "That's great." And he said, "I'm going to schedule you for the first available." And so on June 1st, I was the very first person back in the, after the hospitals reopened, because if you remember, a lot of non-essential services were restricted. So I found myself in the basement of Women and Infants Hospital getting my MRI. I wasn't afraid because I'd been doing this for several years. And it turned out that I had lumps on both sides. Then once, and it was kind of a eerie moment because I literally was the only person in the hospital, the only patient. I'd never been into an empty hospital before. So it felt kind of ominous when I was there. And then also I was surprised when I got the result. And so they decided to biopsy and found that the right side was malignant and the lump on the left was benign. And so I was diagnosed with an aggressive breast cancer, and but very early. So it was grade 3 and stage 0, which means basically that it was very early and still contained to the ducts, but it was a very aggressive cancer. And so that's how my journey began.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And I think it just reminds me about the power. I think both the story that Gail shared and yourself, the power of staying on top of your health and early screening, certainly in this case, I mean, it's, you know, aggressive forms of cancer can obviously progress very fast. So I'm curious about, you know, Dr. Nunn, you have, you know, extensive public health experience, both scientifically, clinically, in and out, setting up different clinical systems. As someone who's, quote, works on the inside, How do you, what are your thoughts on the system there in general, and whether and what worked and what didn't, and what are some challenges that you faced that you were, you know, especially surprised by?
Yeah, so I found that I really had to be an advocate for myself. My surgeon, David Edmondson, I credit him with saving my life and also keeping me on my prevention regimen, which ultimately saved me. But I found that it was, especially in a COVID environment, sometimes difficult to access the services. And there were a lot of the services were a little bit disjointed. So I had to really advocate for myself and be vocal about and ask a whole lot of questions, particularly during my experience with radiation, in order to get answers to a lot of my questions. I'm a curious patient, maybe because of my own background, but I found that sometimes patients can get lost in big healthcare systems.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we, you know, we've observed in COVID as well. It's just our healthcare system's incredibly complex. You even sort of alluded to this early on, where you had to pay out of pocket for certain healthcare expenses, and that can obviously be a barrier for lots of different people as well. So definitely some challenges. Also, you know, I've worked alongside you here during this time. And I think, you know, personally, one thing that's impressed me, of course, is that you've been running a nonprofit organization and during this time as well. And I think one thing just to let viewers know is that you also started a clinic during the pandemic and are basically running a new clinic during, you know, not just the pandemic, but also a diagnosis of cancer. So do you, how has that gone? And what are some of the challenges that have affected, how has this cancer diagnosis affected some of your professional and work life?
Yeah, so we opened Rhode Island's first LGBTQ clinic called Open Door Health on March 2nd, 2020. And it's been one of my public health dreams to open this clinic, because we really did have unmet need for culturally tailored services for the LGBTQ community. So it was certainly difficult to deal with those things all at once. I really think that we have an amazing team at Open Door Health, and all of those people really stepped up and helped during a time where, you know, I wasn't feeling great, including Dr. Chan, but also Dr. Matt Murphy and Cassie Sutton-Coates and Lucy Maddock, who is our CFO. All went above and beyond during a really chaotic year. But sometimes, you know, you don't choose when you get your challenges, and sometimes it's easier to just keep things moving than to stop in midstream.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think everyone has stepped up in different ways, and that's one, you know, there's not many good things that have come out of the pandemic, but to me, one of the good things that has come out is really the way I think that Rhode Islanders and the community in general has come together. And it's been great to see people, certainly within the healthcare, public health, clinical sector, support each other. It really is an all hands on deck and has been a team effort. And I'm certainly reminded of that. Let me ask you one last question here, and then I'll turn it back over to Dr. McDonald here. But given your public health and medical perspective, what should listeners at home know about early detection and significance and its significance in general in terms of not just breast cancer, but I think all cancers and preventative health screenings?
Yeah, so I think one thing people are thinking about a lot now is how they can reduce their risks. And a lot of people are deciding to forego important medical appointments. So I just want to encourage everyone to use their best judgment about that. There's a lot of evidence that's showing that because of the COVID pandemic, a lot of people are forgoing essential medical services that may actually be leading to some of the high mortality rates that we're seeing, that we saw in 2020. So there's lots of different options for engaging with the health system now. Thank goodness we have more telemedicine options than we've had in the past, both for telephone and video. And so to all the women out there, I want to say, please continue to get your preventive screenings. If you don't feel comfortable going in person, at least talk to your providers on video or on the telephone. If I had not gotten my MRI when I did, I might not be alive today, or certainly probably wouldn't be feeling good. So I've been cured of cancer, and that's really because of the preventive regimen that Dr. Edmondson had me on. Had I not been on that, I might not have survived.
Yeah, Dr. Nunn, that is a great note to bring our podcast to a close on. You know, one of the things I just wanted to end with a little bit is, you know, cancer is a very personal journey. And Gail, one of the things I saw you do during your personal journey was you actually created this website, cancerunited.org. Can you tell us briefly what cancerunited.org is? Or cancerunited.net, right?
Cancerunited.net. And so
you would think your own husband would know your own website, but it's cancerunited.net. I got it. Go ahead, please.
During the many years of this cancer journey, one thing I was surprised at was the fact that there are so many cancer resources out there that are free for people who have been diagnosed with cancer. And most of them I didn't find out about until after I needed them. So I decided to put together a website where people with cancer can go and just see all the different resources that are available locally and nationally. And, you know, just so people have information about things that are out there for them, like cleaning for a reason. If you've had breast cancer, you can get free cleaning services to help you through your journey. I mean, some of this is different right now because of COVID, but so I just tried to, as I learn about resources, I add them to cancerunited.net.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting us know about cancerunited.net. And I want to thank Dr. Nunn for joining us. I want to thank you, Gail, as well. You know, one of the things you remind me of, both of you do, although cancer is a very personal journey, you know, I am just reminded how it was really our friends, our family, our community who really helped us through. So it's a personal journey, but really involves a lot of community support to make sure the journey is successful. Dr. Chan, what's the final word for today?
Great. And thank you again, both Dr. Nunn and Mrs. McDonald, for joining us. Thank you for sharing those very personal experiences, and hopefully they'll help some others get screened and potentially save some lives. So thank you both again. In closing, I leave everyone with a moment of Zen to consider throughout the rest of the day. And here it is, a quote by Nelson Mandela. It's been said a few times, but here it is. The greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Thank you all and be well.
I want to thank Carol Stone, our technical director. I want to thank Jose Garcia, our executive producer, and have a great day.